ideology.
Tenure. Coffee.
Light bulb. Critique.
Methods. Dysentery. Lavish.
Corduroy. Research.
You are listening to.
You're listening to.
Prof Talk.
On CITR.
Thank you very much.
Good Monday morning. Hello and welcome to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Karen Moxley. Today on the show, we'll hear an interview with Professor Stefan Dollinger from the English Department here at UBC. Professor Dollinger studies the history of the English language, and he is especially an expert in the world of Canadian English. We're joined now by journalism student Carrie Blackadar, who conducted today's interview with Professor Dollinger. Hello, Carrie.
Hi, Karen.
So, can you tell us a bit about the interview that we're going to hear?
Sure. Well, when you hear words like toonie, toque, double-double, serviette, poutine, or even washroom, did you realize that these are Canadianisms?
No, I'd never even think about it, actually.
Well, they are. And last week, I interviewed Professor Stefan Dollinger. And, as you mentioned, he teaches English language here at UBC. And he is also the director of the Canadian English Lab. I actually took a class from him several years ago. And at that time, he was just starting to revise the 1967 Dictionary of Canadianisms. Today, you'll hear all about his project and also learn a little bit more about Canadian English.
That sounds fabulous. I look forward to hearing the interview. But first, I'd like to remind all of you out there that the annual fund drive is going on right now at CITR. CITR relies heavily upon support from listeners and donors like you. Your contributions will ensure that UBC's campus station remains independent community radio in the years ahead. I'll be giving out the pledge line phone number throughout the show. Please do call in and show your support for our station, 101.9 FM in Vancouver. That phone number to call is 604-822-8648. That's 604 UBC UNIT unit. All right, and now let's hear the interview. A, here is Professor Dollinger, an expert in Canadianisms.
I'm Stefan Dollinger, and I'm an assistant professor at the Department of English at UBC. And I'm a member, I'm part of the language program which we have here, so it's a linguistics / language program here. So we're not doing literature. And I'm born and raised Austrian, but I've lived in Canada now for 5 years, and I'm Canadian now as well. And what I do mostly is I teach and I research. And in my research, I mostly work on Canadian varieties of English. So I'm the new Canadian who's telling the Canadians what they do when they speak.
Okay, that sounds good. So just what is meant by Canadian English?
Canadian English, there's a number of definitions, but the most plausible is that it's the varieties of English that are spoken in Canada. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether you sit in Toronto and speak your sociolect there, or whether you're a working class member in somewhere in the prairies, or whether you're someone from Newfoundland with your own unique dialect. These are all varieties of Canadian English, and what we try to do is here, we try to work on them to, on the one hand, describe them, and on the other, to theorize about them, and maybe to project things, how Canadian English varieties will be developing in the future, whether they'll be assimilating to American Englishes or not, or whether they retain their linguistic autonomy, or maybe further develop them. So those are all questions that we're looking in.
So what are some of the main characteristics of Canadian English?
That's a funny question, Carrie, because you should know actually from taking one of my classes, but no. I mean, there are differences on all linguistic levels of descriptions. The first and most obvious ones are lexical variables. So, you know, Canadians say things differently than people in the States or in Britain. In Canada, you have a parkade, and I guess you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who parks their car in a parkade in the States. And then we have, like, things on a linguistically deeper level, like phonetic pronunciations or phonological forms, so sounds. So those are things like many Canadians say, say the diphthong in house a little bit different than the one they would say in houses. So that's called Canadian raising, or in wife the same, and they say it differently than in wives. But very interesting are things on a syntactical level. For instance, the standard Canadian English, so that's the variety that's spoken, you know, and heard on the news or or in print media, has a construction that uses as well in the beginning of a sentence. So that's something that we haven't found in standard varieties elsewhere. So that could be a Canadian marker.
When you're looking at words that are Canadian, what are some of the ones that you've discovered and you've looked into in your research?
Well, there are things like, you know, that parkade that I mentioned, but then they're like more, you know, more colloquial expressions. There's good reasons to assume that words like grow up are Canadian. That's something that's been around for quite a while here. That's now being exported. So those are more recent terms. There are all kinds of things like they're very strange things. Like for instance, if some people take up a test, which is if you go over the answers. That's an Ontarian term that seems to be used only in Ontario, as far as we know, to go through the answers of a test and compare. You know, we discover political terms like householder is something that is one of those information pamphlets that you get the kind of backup briefing that's called a householder in Canada. And, you know, there are meteorological terms like humidex on the weather stations that was created here. Generation X is one of those things that Douglas Copeland gave us with a different meaning. The form, the word has been around, but it's acquired a new meaning. So there's lots of things. This is why we're compiling a dictionary of those terms, and we try to trace their development throughout time. So from the first time that it was used, at least in print sources, to the current day, that's how we're trying to document these terms and try to document their changes as well.
What was the purpose of revising the Canadian dictionary?
Well, first of all, it's old, it's outdated. It was published in 1967, and Canada has evolved in the last 50 years, 40 years quite a bit. So there's a lot of terms that are just not there. So, you know, the grow-up thing that I mentioned, grow-up as a concept is not there. A grow-rip, you know, when a grow-up is taken over, all those terms are not there. So it's that's one thing. And then on the other, we want to make it digital. It's something that we think all Canadians should have, all people should have access to. And so we're digitizing the first edition, and we're mining words and words in context, which we call citations, from all kinds of sources, so that we can make it better, bigger, and more complete.
How many people are working on this project right now?
Right now, we have about 5 or 6 undergraduate students who help us with the extraction of data. And then we have 3 editors who are, besides me, Laura Brinton and Marjorie Fee, and 2 software programmers who are hired part-time. So we're working with them. And then we have a publishing partner in Toronto who we try to do the right thing for us, so we can get the copyright cleared and we can put the thing up on the web.
Great. So besides accessing it on the web, can I go out and buy this dictionary in the store when it comes out?
You can buy the first edition now, the 1967 edition. It's still in print. It's not advertised. For the new edition, that depends on the publisher. That's something, if they want to publish a book, fine. You know, we have the material and the resources. It's great. But in this day and age, the dictionary market is very shaky. I don't know if you've heard, but the Canadian Oxford Dictionary was just, the dictionary unit that produced that dictionary was just shut down in October. So for print dictionaries, it's a very tough market right now. And so this is why we decided already 4 years ago when we started the project, that we'll definitely have a very strong online presence. And that's what we've been building on. And I'd be happy. I mean, it'd be nice to see it in print, right? But if not, then it's online. It's just as fine in many ways, even better than on paper.
Why did you decide to get involved? And I mean, why are you interested in Canadian English?
Yeah, this is one of these historical accidents. I'm a trained historical linguist, so I worked on Old and Middle English, and Austria is very strong in this front. And then I was looking for a PhD topic, and I had originally started out on another topic on medieval English, but I felt the first couple of months in that my heart wasn't really in it, so I was looking around, and I had spent a year in Toronto on an exchange program, And so I thought, well, hey, let's look at the development of historically English in Canada and see how Canadian English developed. And when I looked around, there wasn't a lot there. So and now that's why I wrote my book, and it's been published now. So there's one more thing on it. So it's an accident, you know. And then you study elsewhere, and you meet friends and people, and then you kind of develop this bond. And now I'm Canadian, so that's how it works.
Right, now you can say A and feel like you really mean it, I guess.
Well, my accent is not the same, right?
Okay, so what, through this research with the dictionary, what's something that surprised you?
Oh, what surprised me? It's that there are a lot of terms that are marked Canadian, right? But they don't tell you really why they market Canadians. So that surprised me a bit. So this is one of the reasons why we're putting in typology of Canadianisms. So we tell the reader why we think this is a Canadianism and what type it is. So for instance, toque is a different type of Canadianism than is parkade. Parkade was coined, was really created here in the 50s, it seems. Toque is a linguistic form, is a word that's been around for a while. It meant something else, like a lady's hat, a chef's hat. And in Canada, it was semantically changed to mean this woolen hat that we think about. So that would be a different type. And but I was surprised also that I think those things are not taught in schools, in high schools. People come to our department here, take a course in English language, and just don't know that there is a Canadian English around, or what this might be, or what's Canadian and what's not. So it was those very basic things. And that was surprising in a way, because linguists have looked at that for the last 50 years, and many of the things are not new. So somehow there seems to be this disconnect between research on the one hand and the things that are being taught at schools.
You're listening to an interview with Professor Dollinger with the UBC English Department. We'll be right back.
I heard Grandpa on my transistor radio. Though he turned in his bones 20 years ago.
CITR is seeking to fill the airways with the names, voices, and ideas of you, our listeners,
who will help us raise $24,000 during this fund drive.
We want you to take ownership of your station. After the fund drive, we'll record donors' voices for a special donor recognition day.
Donors' names will be read out each hour, and donors of $101.9 or more will have a chance to air a personalized message, a rant, a birthday wish, a poem to a girlfriend, or a shout-out to a favorite band.
This is a small way for us to thank you for your support of quality independent radio.
And I finally realized what he wanted to show me. Where I've been, where I am, is the show.
Own your frequency.
This is your station.
Support CITR now. Call 604-822-8648. 604-UBC-UNIT.
Or donate online at citr.ca/donate.
Welcome back to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Today on the show, we're listening to Professor Stefan Dollinger. Is Canadian English the same across Canada?
No, it's not. There are regionalisms, there are features that are shared between certain areas. One of our biggest problems is that we don't have a national survey of Canadian English. That's an undertaking that used to be done in the earlier parts of the 20th century. So the United States, they have significant sections of their geographical area mapped, but not completed. Those are massive undertakings. In today's research environment, it's going to be hard to, you know, to get the funding to pay people to go outside into the country and record people. But we can do bit by bit. And so the more we find out, the more interesting it is to see that there's actually quite a bit of a homogeneity of Canadian English from coast to coast, with the exception of Newfoundland. That's interesting. There's a phonological feature in the sound system, the low back vowel merger, that is not unique to Canada. Many things are not unique to Canada, but it's the particular mix of features in Canada that is special. But this low back vowel merger, that phonological feature is something that is shared basically across the country.
And for those people who don't know, can you explain what that is?
Yeah, it's the pronunciation of lot and thought, that those would be, that those words would sound the same. Also the past tense of catch, which is caught, and the little bed that you sleep on, caught, C-O-T, are pronounced the same. So in some North American dialects, that is being done. That is pronounced the same, but basically all across Canada, you have that merger of those two vowels in the system. So that's one of the features that is very firm on Canadian soil. Yeah.
Okay. So in terms of the regional variation, what are some of the words that might be pronounced differently in Toronto versus Vancouver?
In Toronto, you would have more of a Canadian raising, so that's the kind of pronunciation of. When the ow or the I diphthong, like in house or in wife, are followed by a voiceless sound, that the first part of that diphthong would be pronounced with the tongue higher towards the roof of the mouth. So you would say things like house on the one hand and houses on the other, because in the first, in house, it is a voiceless environment, and in houses it is not, it's a voiced environment. So that would occur stronger in Ontario than it does in Western Canada. Another thing would also be that you have, for instance, a lowering of the front vowel air, like in man, before N and before G. So you would not quite say a man, but more a little bit, and I'm exaggerating here, like a man. And that is actually part of a sound shift that's called the Canadian shift, which is a climb from east to west. So it's done more extremely in Ontario and central Canada and less extremely in the west coast. But for listeners with the naked ears, for Canadians, it's hard to really be able to tell what's been going on. But linguists, with their tools now of recording and exact measurement, can take samples of speakers, provide averages of vowel heights, and then really are in the position to tell what is going on. And that's quite stunning. So it could well be that in 50 years' time or so, the Canadian shift and the northern city shift in the States might just act as an isogloss, as a linguistic boundary between Canada and the States. And this despite, a lot of mobility across the border and a lot of exchange and all the media and those kind of things that have been influencing Canada for a while. But there's something else going on here that that is Canadian in the changes that are going on. So you just have to look very carefully and study them carefully.
What are a couple of reasons why this research is important for Canadians?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with Canadian identity. I mean, Canadians love to talk about, you know, what it means to be Canadian, right? And so, and we could add here like a linguistic layer to the discussion. And it's something that it could be constructed as an identity marker, a subconscious, unconscious identity marker on the side of Canadians to distinguish themselves from Americans. Without knowing it, it also tells you a little bit about the importance of face-to-face interaction. So it doesn't really matter so much if you listen to American media all the time, or most of the time, or if the CBC has only a relatively small share. In the media environment, that doesn't really matter so much. What does matter is that, you know, the people you hang out with, the people you grew up with, the people you play in the sand pit with, the people you hang out at high school, those are the ones that you will be using as your role models, and that you will be adapting towards. And so this shows us that the networks are Canadian mostly, and so changes are being spread among Canadians. And it's true that some regions contribute more to those changes than others, but there's still something Canadian in all of them. You just need to go look at it, and you will find something.
Okay, so in Vancouver, you've been looking at this phenomenon called yaw dropping and the low back vowel merger. So what is that exactly?
Yaw dropping is things like those are Contexts like in certain words, like student or toon or Tuesday, you can pronounce this with a year. So you can say student, you can say Tuesday, you can say due, or you can pronounce it without the yod, and you say student, Tuesday, do, right? And as you know, most Canadians don't pronounce the yod, so pronounce it yodless, student, do's, news. That's a change that's now nearing completion in some environments. Student is one of those variables where it's fairly far entrenched by now. The same thing with news, where older speakers still insert the yod, like the old British way of saying things, British influenced way. But then there's some variables like avenue, where 80% of all Canadians in Vancouver, they cling on to the yod, so they say avenue, whereas you'd be hard pressed to find an American saying avenue. In more than 90% of all cases, Americans would say avenue without the yod. So there are some special cases where Canadians cling on to their markers and that mark them different from Americans. There are more complex cases than like coupon, whether it's coupon or coupon, and that's a thing that's that's about evenly split now, where about 50% of the people say the one thing or the other, of the young people, I mean, and where there doesn't seem to be a change detectable right now. So we'll see where that'll go. So the question is now what you do with these data, and you can correlate this with, you know, with age, that's the most important thing, with social class, with education, and see where changes come from or which groups lead changes in which way.
And do you have any idea right now whether it's young people leading the change or?
Yeah, the yod dropping in student and news is led by the young folks. You can see nice trajectories here in this respect. For coupon, we don't know what's going on. That's something we need to figure out. So we need to dig a little deeper here. And for avenue, it's steady. It's all across the board. It doesn't matter whether you are 101, that's our oldest informant speaker in our sample, or whether you are 14, our youngest ones. They say avenue in 80% of the cases with a year. So that's a Canadian marker here.
That's really interesting. Okay, so the end of the interview, I just wanted to ask you some either-or questions. So here you go. Okay, Tim Hortons or Starbucks?
Tim Hortons.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet.
Red or white wine?
White wine.
Okay. Pronoun or adverb?
Adverb.
Apples or oranges?
Apples.
First years or grad students?
First years are cool, grad students too, but I'd say first years.
Pen or pencil?
Pencil.
Morning or night?
That's changing. It used to be night, now it's more and more mornings.
Baseball hat or toque?
Toque, of course.
Buttons or zippers?
Buttons.
And finally, cats or dogs?
Cats, that's a clear-cut case.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Streets tonight, as we walk from place to place, the blue halo of TV screens hit the sidewalk and the side of your face. You say this used to be the capital, now it's just a town in neon signs. You say innocence is for those who believe that the guilty just didn't pay at the door. You say, where did it go? My hometown's halo. So you look under the soles of your shoes. You say, yes, yes, yesterday's got none to lose. Thank you.
driver's making conversation. Says he was a doctor in Lebanon. Now he's got four kids and an accent in Montreal in February. And he drops us off at the corner. Says, may God be with us always. Everything has a price, he says. But you don't realize how much some of us have to pay. Now see, where did he go? My country's halo. So I look under the soles of my shoes. Now see, yes, 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 got nothing to
life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electro-pop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow, the clouds lift, and we're making it like young. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow. rainbow, the clouds fit.
You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
Lingering question. So, Carrie, great interview. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. But I still have one lingering question. What about that one quintessential Canadian word, the word A?
Yes, that's funny, Karen. It actually never came up in the interview, but I ended up following up with Stefan later, and I asked him about it. As it turns out, A is not a unique marker of Canadian English. In fact, it's found in many varieties. But in Canada, Stefan says A was originally associated with the lower class. But in the last 30 years, there has been a bit of an A revival, and the word has lost its stigma.
Aha, well, now we know. Thanks a lot, Carrie. And thank you again to Professor Dollinger and, of course, to Carrie Blackadar for being with us on today's show. And, of course, a huge thank you goes out to Lex Stoymanoff, Prof Talk's intrepid producer. A reminder to our listeners to call into the station at 604-822-8648 if you can help out with the CITR Fun Drive. And also check out our brand new Prof Talk blog at www.ubcproftalk.wordpress.com. From our blog, you can also link to a podcast of today's show as well as past episodes. Have a wonderful week, everyone, and we will see you back here next Monday morning for another edition of Prof Talk. Next week on the show, we'll be talking to Professor Joe Cutbirth from the UBC School of Journalism. We'll see you here next week for that. Once again, I'm your host, Karen Moxley. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy the day.